this is where Texas politics gets interesting. Here again are two guys named Jason, some great guests, and cold Texas beer for another smart conversation on Y'allitics, the unofficial political podcast of Texas.
Season's greetings.
Yes. Happy all of the holidays.
Happy everything.
To everyone. Yeah. Welcome to almost the end of the year. What are you cracking open there that's been shaken up substantially? Don't open it my way.
This is an Aluminum Cowboy light lager. And
there it goes.
Yeah, there it goes.
Told you.
Yeah.
So
this is from Hop and Steam Brewing Company. This podcast is a little different from normal. We did this last year, I believe, and we have Bud Kennedy back with us from the Fort Worth Star-Telegram, Bernadine Steptoe, political producer at WFA in Dallas, Whiteley and Wheeler, and we are doing Cheers and Jeers, our year-end award ceremony.
Yeah, and you know, just to lay this out too, like we pick several things each to cheer and to jeer, but I'm not cheering the things that I'm cheering. I'm saying that like perhaps they had a good year, okay? The jeers, same thing, they had a bad year. So, you know, don't take it like I endorse these things and like these things and don't endorse and don't like these things.
Already the disclaimer, bud.
Oh, disclaimer early on,
you
right up
front. You said this wasn't like a normal podcast, but what exactly is the benchmark for normal podcast?
That's a good question.
There is no real normal, bud.
Right.
What are you drinking again?
I told you, man, the Hop and Sting Aluminum Cowboy.
Okay.
It's a light lager.
Everybody chose this.
Yeah,
except
because
me.
I like this word.
Okay.
Cowboys.
Yeah. It's smart because it looks a lot like the Dallas Cowboys. It's got the silver and blue.
And the star.
It's not a bad idea if you're brewing a beer in Texas, although this year I wonder what their sales have been like.
This is a good Tarrant County product.
Well, there you go. Well, that's where the Cowboys play, though, too. I'm going against the grain, oddly. I'm having a Union Bear Brewing Company Mexican-style lager. This is made in Denton, Texas, which is north of Tarrant County. And they say that the malts and hops take a back seat in this one and let the lager yeast take the wheel. That's what it says.
Let
on
the
here.
Yeast take the wheel.
Yeah.
So this is an awards episode, and Wheeler is throwing out these disclaimers early on that he doesn't want to actually cheer anybody or actually give anyone a jeer. But
no.
Here's the whole point. We're raising a glass to the politicos who've had a good 2024. And we might pour one out for those who, we're not going to pour any out.
We're not going to pour any out.
Not in the Y'allitics lounge here.
Yeah.
But we might pour one out figuratively.
I see it
for those
as,
who haven't had a good year.
I see it as, you know, okay, raising a glass, like you can celebrate yourself. I'm not necessarily celebrating you.
You're just going to call
even
out
the if names. I like you.
Well, why don't you
I'm
go
not
first
celebrating
with
you? And so if I don't like you, I'm not pouring it out, but you can pour it out. How's that sound?
But he's
gone too far because I want to make it very clear that we're not saying we like or dislike.
Correct.
We're just looking at some of the things that they have done that needs recognition or not.
See, that is our disclaimer voice right there. I should have just left it to you, Bernadine. You say it so much more eloquently than I do.
Nobody wants to lay claim to any of these, so Wheeler, you go first.
Okay, I will start.
Who do you have?
I'm starting with a jeer, okay? It's for the Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals out of New Orleans. They are out of New Orleans, Louisiana, but this circuit handles the cases from Texas as well, Mississippi.
And you don't like the Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals, right? That's what you're saying?
Don't get me in trouble with the Fifth Circuit. They are very influential. I don't want to mess with them. But they had some big victories this year. You know, I think a victory for a court of criminal appeals in any of the circuits is when your big cases get snatched up by the U.S. Supreme Court, when they, you know, take review of it after you're done with it. If they tend to go along with a lot of the rulings that you've made, then, you know, maybe it was a good year. But if they don't, perhaps it was a bad year. Although, you know, some people would say even in getting struck down in many of these cases, that the Fifth Circuit has been very influential, even in the cases where they've been struck down. They had some big wins this year, but the Texas Tribune, I thought, put it great. They had this line that said, if the fifth U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals was a boxer, you would bet on the other guy. And then they just lay it out that they had 8 cases overturned, more than any other court this term. So more
overturned
than any
by the Supreme Court.
Overturned by the Supreme Court. On all kinds of the cases here, some very high-profile cases. And this is a very conservative U.S. Supreme Court, And if they're not going along, that just tells you how much further to the right the Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals is. And that has led to a lot of folks who want to make conservative challenges to file their cases somewhere in that district, with the Fifth Circuit overseas. So, a lot of people are bringing their cases there to see how far right they can push the U.S. Supreme Court. Newsweek had a good point about this, I thought. They talked about how it's influential this court is, even if it's losing some of these cases. They said even when these groups lose, they still give valuable information. The Supreme Court's opinions tend to give information about what types of policies may be more acceptable to them, and that allows these groups who are bringing these lawsuits to kind of gauge things and rearrange things and decide to pursue the case again in a different way that they think might get the approval
and
of the Supreme Court.
And sometimes they do. Sometimes they'll come back, right?
They will.
But the Fifth Circuit is where all the Texas cases end up. It's where Ken Paxton loves the Fifth Circuit in New Orleans because he's had a lot of success there.
Yeah.
Well, like you say, the cases get filed in places like Amarillo, Wichita Falls. And, it was interesting, too, Elon Musk and X and his new agreement, the terms of service for X, you agree that if you have any sort of legal claim against X, it has to be filed in the courts of Tarrant County, Texas.
Yep.
Which would
get swept.
End up if it was to go to an appeal.
One final note on this, Stephen Vladek, who is a brilliant law professor who used to be at the University of Texas at Austin and moved on to Georgetown, he told the Texas Tribune, these rulings from the Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals have the effect of taking legal theories that were off the wall and putting them on the wall. Even when they're losing, the effect is to make these cases of national import and give credibility to those arguments. So again, even if they lost more cases than any other circuit once they got to the Supreme Court, they are still changing how cases are being viewed nationally.
Hmm. All right, I'm up next with the next, this is a cheers. And
you're so positive.
I'm a positive guy, Wheeler, but this is a cheers, and I want you to hear me out on this one, because don't stop the podcast. you might want to pour a harder drink for this one.
Okay.
I'm giving a cheers to Kamala Harris and Democrats. What? Why would you do that? They got clobbered, right?
They did.
Well, they took their loss and went home. No allegations of voter fraud. They weren't out there trying to destabilize the system at all. We didn't win. It's over. We're going to move on.
That's very old school.
It's old school, yeah. It's pre-2016.
Yeah.
Pre-2020 is what it is. So my question right now to the brighter minds on the studio, on the right side of the studio, not the left side here. You think we'll see Kamala Harris again, guys?
Well, I want to respond first to what you said about not putting you, well, you getting in trouble for giving her a cheer because although she lost, she ran a very good campaign.
Mm. Now, 100 days, yeah.
You could, well, most days, you could question the messaging of the whole Democratic Party.
Sure.
But she worked hard. She went everywhere that she needed to go. She raised the money. It was just not her time.
That was a fast start too, and not a lot of runway to get that plane
days,
off the ground.
And she had the grit to do it.
Yeah. Bud, do you think we'll see her again?
I think
well,
just
Jason White, I am not seeing.
Don't pause, Bernadine. If there's a pause, we will jump in there.
I bow to Bernadine.
Yeah, go ahead, Bernadine. Do you think we'll see her again? Do you think she's running for governor of California?
Jason White, there's never a never in politics. So we can't say today whether or not we're going to see her because there's never a never in politics.
Yeah.
So my response is, let's see.
Yeah. Okay, what do you think, Bud?
I think she wants us to see her again, and I think we might see her again because of the lack of other negotiable candidates in the party. As far as campaigns, if Hillary Clinton had run that hard, she would have been president. I think that for the short period of time, Harris ran a very effective campaign. The problem was the messaging and the really narrow focus of the campaign that didn't bring in enough people and didn't bring in a broad enough voter base. But she, if you were a consultant, say, okay, I want a candidate to work hard, go everywhere, meet these people, you would think she did a good job.
I will say it was an unexpectedly wide blowout here in Texas, but this again came down to, I mean, if she had flipped just several of those swing states by a number of, you know, several hundred thousand votes, this would be a totally different outcome. And yeah. So, you know, a lot of folks have been talking about this mandate, this overwhelming vote. When you look at it, it was, you know, still historically close. And you look at the U.S. House of Representatives, that's historically close again this time around. So, you know, for 100 days, it was a tremendous effort. And I do think that we're likely to see her again in 4 years.
I bet if she runs again, she'll go on Joe Rogan's show if she runs again.
Yeah, but then she'll learn that lesson.
I think Democrats will be lining up for Joe Rogan's show.
But you think we'll see her again in 4 years?
I think that we will see her attempt again in 4 years. I think that there's going to, I mean, that's a lot of time for other people to percolate to the surface. There's going to definitely be a battle for who becomes the nominee the next time around. But I don't think you put this much skin in the game and take something this far to back away and just, you know, take everything and go home. And I mean, you know, it used to be that, you know, once you lost, you know, you sort of got that mark on you. Donald Trump lost 4 years ago, and here he is again, the winner.
And then also, and I think what could be her challenge, speaking as of today, donors, if she would be able to raise the money.
Trump has a different hold on his political party than Harris or anybody in the Democratic side.
True.
Nobody has a hold like that. Yeah. And Trump has an iron grip on the GOP. Bernadine, you're next up. Who do you have?
I want to cheer State Representative elect Katrina Pearson.
Republican from Rockwell.
Republican from Rockwell. And I like to do that because when she ran, she did not, in her primary, she did not have the support of Governor Abbott. She did not have the support of Lieutenant Governor Dan Patrick. She didn't have the support of President-elect Trump. But she beat an incumbent. Mm. And if you look at her history, she's never given up as well, because she started as a Tea Party, as a Tea Partier. And then once she did so well in the primary, then you had those elected officials who I mentioned earlier, they jumped to her campaign, and she just welcomed them. Now, I'm not going to say that wouldn't have been politically smart had she not.
Right.
But she just welcomed them and said, hey, come on and join my campaign. And she won and didn't even have an opponent. So I think that I will cheer her in that respect.
Yeah. Good. Bud, do you have a list today?
Yeah, I really need to say that I think I have to be the one up here to say I think Greg Abbott had a really great year. Mm. And I think for all of the terrible things that might have happened, I think that, you know, the two things happened. He said he wanted to pass vouchers. He got 12 incumbents thrown out of the Texas House in order to pass vouchers.
Yeah.
That's a phenomenal political achievement. And then, you know, he comes around in the middle of the summer when there's really not that much conversation about the border or immigration. He says, okay, why don't we pick all these people up at the border coming to Texas, and why don't we bus them to New York, bus them to Chicago, bus them to blue cities across the country? And it got the national conversation started about the border. It really brought it home. Now, other people had tried. Ron DeSantis tried first to transport, but it all people went, you can't do that. You don't have those people's permission. You've taken people where they're not going. It all went wrong. He took people to Martha's Vineyard. Mm-hmm. You know, it made no sense. Greg Abbott asked him, where you want to go? Let's get you there.
On the taxpayer dime, though.
On the taxpayer dime, to the tune of millions of dollars.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But it brought the national attention to the issue, and yes, it cost the people of Texas millions of dollars. I believe it also might have turned the election, turned the attention, and gotten Donald Trump elected president.
Mm-hmm. And it created crises in New York City. Mayor Eric Adams was having, you know, saying, stop sending them, Texas. This is ridiculous. Chicago, D.C.?
And Republicans were not sad about that.
The mayors just flopped around like a fish in a boat, just saying, okay, first they said, all these poor people, wonderful, come in, let's get you in this hotel, and they got them hotel rooms, and then people in those cities started saying, wait a minute, we're a little too accommodating here. The mayors all look terrible. Then they sort of say, no, we can't take any more people. Texas, stop sending us more people. And so it made the Democrats look weak. It made Trump look right. And it really, I think, brought the border issues that Texas has been fighting to the tune of $3 billion in the next millennium in border defense. It brought those issues to the whole country.
Yeah, I would say that Greg Abbott is probably certainly very happy with the results that he's had in 2024. And he should definitely be sending some holiday gifts to whoever cut ads for a lot of those races where he got those incumbents thrown out here in Texas. Because a lot of those ads, even though vouchers were his priority, school vouchers, you didn't hear anything about school vouchers in those ads. It was right. all about border, border, border. And he was able to get those candidates across the finish line. Curious to see, you know, if and when Republicans get those vouchers, how that goes over in some of these communities that have traditionally fought this mm-hmm. this effort, including those rural Republicans who have stood up against it. So we'll see if he's, you know, in the cheers column in 25.
He's not in the teacher's cheers column. Okay, I'll get to that later.
Not at all.
I'm going to, since everybody started with a cheer, my gosh, except me, I'm going to do a cheer this time.
All right. And this Who are you toasting?
For all, of all the entities, the Electric Reliability Council of Texas, ERCOT.
You got some exciting picks over there. Fifth Circuit, ERCOT, listen.
Well, something has been going right, okay? So we got to say things, when things go right, we got to say that too. Now, some of it may just be that we haven't had the extreme weather as much. We do still have a long winter to get through, and that seems to be right. the hardest thing for us to get through these years. But after 11 of those conservation notices where they were like, hey, turn everything off, turn off your AC, whatever, we need to conserve power. We had 11 of those last year. This year, two so far. Much fewer as far as those, you know, like, hey, we just need everybody's cooperation so we make sure that the grid can hold up. Now, a lot of that is due to the fact that we've had wind and solar and batteries in particular. We had Doug Lewin on not long ago here on the podcast. He's the president of Stoic Energy, specializes in green energy. He was talking about we've been setting new solar and wind records here, a new overall solar record surpassing the one that had previously been set by California. And batteries, he says, on so many days. He just sent out a message the other day saying that batteries supplied 9% of the power in one evening, one December evening recently.
Just batteries.
9% of all the power in Texas was coming out of batteries that had been storing wind and solar power all day when it wasn't as much needed by the rest of us. This was on a day, he said, when we had a particularly high number of outages from traditional plants like gas-fired plants, and boy, those batteries kick in, and the rest of us just don't even know it. But you know, the effect it has is it stabilizes the grid during those especially difficult times. Now, that being said, ERCOT, you know, has its challenges too. Ed Herz, who's also been on the podcast with us, the energy fellow at the University of Houston, he is not shy about, you know, criticizing the system. He just had a column in Forbes where he said the grid is actually more vulnerable and fragile than it was 4 years ago when we had Winter Storm Uri.
It is today, Ed says?
He's using ERCOT's own projections here. He says they project an 80% likelihood. Think about this, an 80% likelihood of rolling blackouts if a storm the magnitude of Winter Storm Uri hits the state this winter. So that February 2021
storm. Why'd you bury the lead, man? Why'd you bury the lead?
Because I build. I build as I go. So so he says 80%, the 80% likelihood there. Prior to Uri in February of 2021, he says the probability of rolling blackouts was just 5%. So that's something. And then he points out a weaker storm equivalent to 2022's Winter Storm Elliott has a 50% probability of triggering rolling blackouts. And there's no real assurance that rolling blackouts can be executed, which would risk a widespread grid failure. So,
and this is the cheers.
Yeah, this is the cheers.
This is the cheers?
You know, I'll give them their due. You know, I mean, they so far, you know, we've had days in the forecast, though.
Bernadisa, what's their
No, I mean, the fact is that they've put out fewer of these conservation notices. Somehow they've managed to get by. Even during times when the forecast says that, you know, we've got, you know, extraordinary heat. Now, we haven't had one of those forecasts yet this winter where we have widespread freezes all the way across the state. That seems to be our big vulnerability. We'll see how we get through the winter. But so far as those notices go, they've done pretty well this year. Maybe the weather has just been kind to them. That solar, wind, batteries, those things have been helping. We'll see if we can get through the winter. and if this continues to be a cheers. But if you're at ERCOT.
I hope they eventually deserve this cheers.
Yeah, if you're at ERCOT, though.
You have to get earn this cheers.
You have to be happy.
This is more of a delayed release cheers.
It's trickling. But you have to be happy if you're sitting in management at ERCOT that you haven't had to put out one notice after another asking people to conserve. And we've hit some power consumption records, and they've just sailed through and been just fine.
Are you on the payroll here or what?
Yeah, Mr. Sunshine.
I'm not a fan of any of the ones I'm cheering or jeering. Or
now we
I'm
know why you
them.
Said that. Yeah,
there goes my disclaimer again.
He knew he was coming up with that one.
We've named you ERCOT's Mr. Sunshine.
The new spokesman.
You are. We can get you a job down there, man, if necessary. All right, so we just heard Bud a moment ago talk about Governor Greg Abbott, the political successes he's had. I'm going to give the opposite of this. I'm going to give him a jeers. Stand by. The jeers. And there are some other headlines he has made besides the enormous success he's had politically. He pardoned Daniel Perry. Mm. Travis County grand jury convicted him of murder. He ignored Supreme Court rulings on the border, a number of those. You know, this is a law and order governor, and he's ignoring the U.S. Supreme Court because he didn't like the rulings from there on the border. He ignored President Biden's Title IX rulings on protecting LGBTQ students. And then, you know, we've talked about this a lot on this podcast. Uvalde. 2.5 years after Uvalde. Zilch. Zero accountability after Uvalde. And that's just, that's disgusting. You know, pin it on whoever you want to pin it on. But the fact that this state let that happen and has done nothing is outrageous.
And even
We suspended a trooper. Oh, but we did this, we did that. Nothing's happened.
And even Abbott's number one man at DPS, Steve McCraw, was able this year to step down, to retire.
And on his own terms.
And be lauded, celebrated as he made his way to the exit, even though DPS had a big role in what happened and didn't happen in Uvalde.
Well, yeah, and I think that's disgusting, and we've discussed that quite a bit. There's still legal action going on with that, too. So I think for this case, the law and order governor selects the laws and orders that he prefers.
And I think that's also why I was just definitely quiet when you gave him that cheer because...
When Bud gave it to him?
Because...
Well, he earned what Bud pointed out.
And I was quiet.
Yeah. You were waiting to talk about this one.
I was waiting to say
the jeers?
Well, and then one could say that he had a lot of accomplishments because he does and he did ignore laws, ignore rulings. He just ignore them and keep moving. Yeah. But anyway, that's all I have to say.
Bud, you've already said your piece about Governor Abbott. Do you want to add anything else?
Well, I want to say just that the DPS is the big failure. It has been consistently. You know, the DPS, the mismanagement of that agency, which reports directly to the governor, has been just a real black eye for Texas considerably, continuously. The only thing that defends the DPS is to point out that half their troopers have been at the border, and they're running on thin staff. There's one patrol trooper for 5 and 6 counties in Texas. Don't tell anybody driving in West Texas
but the
staffing is so thin that there's just not much DPS left, and they have to be sure this is going to be a priority in the legislature, is to not only beef up the DPS at the border, but beef up, return the DPS to some semblance of operating strength across Texas.
Yeah, you don't see it. You used to see them on the sides of highways, and I met a few of them in my time over the years.
You drove like a bat out of hell, man.
I did. I used to, my insurer is listening. But no, I've thought the same thing. You know, it seems like every week or every other week we're talking about another road rage shooting, another road rage death, just in our area in North Texas. And this is happening all over the place. And you just don't see that presence out there. And people are driving like maniacs. Mm. I mean, maniacs.
For you to say that, they must really be driving erratically.
That means they're passing
they really
him.
Yeah, and if you've ever ridden with him, we got to Austin
just
one year.
Scare him to death.
90 minutes. We got to Austin
in
90 minutes.
No, we did not. That's not true.
I was scared to death. True. I had to lay down in the back seat. I was scared to death.
I think it's Bernadine's turn to talk.
So Bernadine, would you have cheers or jeers next, Bernadine?
Who are
you endorsing next, Bernadine?
I'm giving the Texas Democratic Party chair, Hinojosa.
Gilberto,
a cheer
Hinojosa.
Or a jeer?
Giving him a jeer.
Jeer.
Yes, because, number one, not only did he have a poor November election, He blamed everybody but himself. He never talked about looking forward. Now, since then, he has resigned, which I think that he should have.
He said he won't run again next year, right?
That's what he said.
Yeah.
well, he resigned, but he didn't step down.
Yeah.
You know, he said that he won't run again, but in he basically just vacated the but just not physically. And now he blamed everybody. He blamed the Biden administration. He blamed billionaires. He blamed just everyone, and then also didn't attempt to raise money. He just did a poor job chairing the Democratic Party, and I think that, and he's been there so long.
More than what, a decade, 12 years, I believe, something like that?
Yes. Yeah.
Well, the results were disastrous in 2024 for Democrats here in this state, and for that matter in 2022 as well. They had probably the most centrist slate of candidates in 2022 that we've seen in a long time, and just got trounced. Mm. So there's something going on.
Yeah, and it's something, and he should, you know, when he lost all of these elections, I say when he lost them, because when you look at a situation, you always look at the top, and he is the top now. He doesn't run campaigns, individual campaigns, but he does give some kinds of tools. And it just hasn't been there, but he just stayed in the position. Mm. Remember, the last time he ran, he was asked not to run, but he ran and he won again. And so this time he said, okay, if I'm asked to step down, I'll step down. And he was asked and he stepped down. Mm. So, and that's why I jeer him. Not personally, but I jeer his management. I jeer his management style as the chair. Because he could be a nice guy.
Yeah. He is a nice guy.
Well, and he
just most everyone talked about is nice people.
Yeah.
Wow, Bernadine.
I'm not going to say who I stumbled.
I don't know. Are they all nice people?
I mean, stumbled. I'm not.
How much do we really know?
Don't even start in here, man.
It's public.
You start this whole thing with a disclaimer that,
Tell you what. My public image, I might seem like a nice person too, but maybe
I'm not.
You don't.
And your public image.
Well, then maybe that means I really am nice.
And you are.
It sounds like a news teaser. Are these really nice people? We'll tell you tonight at 10.
Yeah, well, people give you the side of them that they want you to see. And it also depends on where you sit on the political spectrum, whether you think any of these people are nice or not, you know, including ERCOT.
I'm not Biden.
Bud, you're up next,
Jason,
man.
Jason, I do want to jeer, because I think that something, and Donald Trump figured this out real early, that Project 2025, the Heritage Foundation, that it all was way off course, way off track for him. And he distanced himself early on from the Heritage Foundation, from Kevin Roberts, the director who'd been here in Texas at TPPF. He said, you know, those people are not, he literally said, those people don't believe what I believe in, and they're not saying what I plan to do. So he right away figured that all these people babbling about Project 20 were just way off track. They were hurting his campaign. Then you have the pastors who've been involved in all the scandals this year. You have Pastor Robert Morris out at Gateway, who was on Trump's, his faith
council.
Leadership team, yeah. Advisory council before, had him out to the church in Dallas. And, you know, Robert Morris hasn't been seen since all the scandal broke. But I think the fact that the faith leaders who put themselves up as being the great friends of Donald Trump and just had a terrible year. And they also wound up with Donald Trump not really giving them anything once he got elected. Already before the election, he was softening his position on immigration. He's never been much of a anti-gay, anti-LGBT guy. He's always said, I'm not mad at people. He's included LGBT. He has a cabinet official, you know, who represents LGBT communities. So I think that the preachers and pastors in general, in particular, the people behind Project 2025, just really stunk it up this year. And I think that that's a big year.
Yeah, a lot of serious allegations with some of those. I want to do a jeer again, and this is to the anti-heroes. So we had these so-called hero amendments in Dallas.
In Dallas, okay.
And if you're not familiar with these and you're in another part of Texas, no fear. These are probably coming to a city near you next. So this is a private group, a guy named Monty Bennett, founder and CEO of a hospitality real estate company in Dallas was behind this. Very conservative guy, publisher of the very conservative Dallas Express, big GOP donor. He was behind this, and basically they went out and gathered a bunch of signatures in Dallas and got three propositions on the ballot. One of them failed. That one would have tied the city manager's pay to and employment to a survey of a very small group of people. That one didn't make it through. Two others did, though. One of them waives the city's sovereign immunity, makes it a lot easier for people to sue the city of Dallas if they feel like they're in violation of any law, local, state, national, whatever it may be. The second one forces the city to hire 900 additional police officers and devote a lot of money in the future to that effort. And basically, the city has come down and said, hey, this is going to lead to drastic cuts at city parks and libraries, street repairs, animal services. Every department's going to be affected. Still, those two got through. And
well, voters supported them.
They supported them. The question is, you know, anecdotally, we've heard from some people who go, oh, I wasn't quite sure what that was, and the language on these is hard. We know that these things are never written great.
Right.
But a lot of people did believe that it was necessary. Perhaps they didn't hear a counter viewpoint, though, because it took so long for the anti-forces to come out and say, hey, we think this would be terrible for the city. They had marquee names come out, though, former mayors and executives, big business people here in the city who came out and said, oh, this would be disastrous. Don't do this. They ended up, I think, outspending the hero folks in advertising. But the fact is, it seemed like it was too little too late. I mean, we kept wondering because the hero people came onto the podcast and explained to us what they were doing.
Early on.
And then months went by and we kept on checking with other folks like, hey, is there opposition to that? Yeah, we're going to have opposition. We're going to get an opposition together. It's coming. Well, what was it like a month before the election when you finally started to hear the anti-heroes coming out? And by then, this has already been, percolating and circulating out there, and people are hearing about this, and they think it maybe sounds like a good idea. They haven't heard any pushback to it. And so we were even stunned, I think, behind the scenes, because we wanted to give equal time and let both sides.
Was there another side?
Yeah, and I think we were stunned that, wow, considering how sweeping this would be affecting the city, I'm shocked that it's taking anyone this long to, form a group to come out and say something about this.
So who's your jeers for then?
The anti-heroes, the folks who eventually coalesced and did it. Yes, they came out with strong messages. They raised money and put it out on the airwaves and so forth. But by then, the train had long left the station.
Yeah.
Like you're doing battle in the 11th hour there. I'm using every metaphor here. But in the end, you were really late in the game there.
Yeah.
Well, and also, I don't think that they were doing the groundwork that was needed.
Mm-hmm.
And I would add the city council to his jeer.
Well,
because
that's what mine's the next jeers, and that's exactly what I have on here.
Oh, okay.
Dallas City Council, Dallas Mayor Aaron Johnson.
Yeah.
Where is the leadership at City Hall? And we've talked about this for all the reasons Jason just stated here.
Well, hold up, man.
Waiting 4 weeks out?
Are we going to take away your opportunity to do your
jeer? No, we're in the middle of it right now. We're in the middle of it.
This is like a double jeer. It's like merging.
I mean,
he selected mine, so yeah. But no, I agree. Where were they? You have this much leadership. You have all these former mayors, almost every living former mayor, I think except maybe one, every living council person who served in Dallas City Council, all these people, and they waited to the last minute to get this thing going, 4 weeks out before the election. It's just shocking to me that they didn't have a better organized opposition campaign against this.
Absolutely.
If they really opposed it.
Well, I think they underestimated it.
Sure.
And I think that by the time they realized, hey, some of these are going to pass, they went into motion, but again, the campaigning is questionable. Because I've talked to some of them, especially council people who say, well, we're not involved. Well, why do you need to be involved? Why does these high-profile people need to involve you for you to do your job and do what you need to do as a city council person?
You're an elected official, yeah.
And I think we've already had the first lawsuit filed. The city is bracing. They think they're just going to be an avalanche of lawsuits coming their way, and imagine the money that's going to be required to fight all of those individual lawsuits. It could really gum up the works. We'll see.
The first lawsuit was filed. to Fort Dallas to clean up homeless encampments, and we had Monty Bennett on our political TV program, Inside Texas Politics, and mm-hmm. he was saying, listen, if they just come up with a plan on how to fix this in the next 180 days, then that'll suffice. But if they don't, we're going to go to court.
Well, we'll see what they do now, because now some of the chatter is, well, we're used to lawsuits, and we're trying to hire a city manager, and we'll get to that when we get to it. But I think they're going to underestimate them again.
I think you're exactly right, Bernadine. All right, you're up next. What do you got?
You know what? I don't know why I'm still looking at these parties, because I'm looking at to give a jeer to the Tarrant County Republican Party.
Okay.
And I'm doing that because of their effort to close voting locations during the election at yeah. colleges.
At UT Arlington is where they were wanting to do that, yeah.
And like Wheeler said earlier, if it starts there, it's going to go all over, because this is not new. You know, you had Republicans trying, not just Tarrant County, trying to close Prairie View A&M. So that's why I'm giving them a jeer, because instead of encouraging young voters, they're trying to stop them from voting or pressure them not to. But that's why I gave them one.
Bud, what do you got?
Well, move on or talk about
whichever one. If you want to talk about Bernadine's,
it was an interesting one point I'll make about that is that they tried to close, but they backed off that, and there were Republicans, including Commissioner Manny Ramirez, who spoke up and said, we need to keep polling locations out there for young people, and we need to draw more young people into the party. And this idea of trying to make the Republican Party into a closed private club by having only certain polling locations and not having anybody young or new is bad for the party. So you had Republicans who didn't agree with that. The county party, of course, was claimed they were looking at ways to streamline the voting. They were right on a couple of cases. There are a couple of the smaller college locations that didn't have a lot of voters. UT Arlington did have a good turnout. Tarrant County College did. But that's something that's going to be fought every election. So yeah.
Well, and to add to that, the party pushed back on Ramirez and called him a rhino and all of this. Mm-hmm. So they didn't even accept that from their own party, fellow party members. So I think they need more than one.
Yeah, and the reason they backed off, obviously, is to better explain, they didn't have the votes for it.
They didn't have the votes.
Right. Commissioner Ramirez wouldn't vote for it, and he got fried,
That's a very good word. Well, underlined.
But he still stood up. He still stood up for it.
We
talked about it.
He stood up and said, we need to have more Republicans. Sure. We need to make a way for more people to be Republicans.
And Tarrant County Judge Tim O'Hare told us on Inside Texas Politics, hey, I still think it's a good idea to look at ways to continue to streamline this, and he's going to go after this again.
But you know what?
In his argument, he says that, listen, there's another place within a mile of this that they can easily walk to.
And that's the one in Arlington. But you know,
City Hall,
the county election director said that they needed 60 polling places. You know, they had 53, and they were trying to cut it to 50. Mm-hmm. I mean, they really need 10 more polling places than they've got now. So.
Yeah. What are you writing down, Brandon?
I want to make sure I underline this word that I'm going to use after I say what I'm going to say, because
this is a family-friendly podcast.
Well, one thing that I've got to choose.
When did it start being family-friendly?
Family-friendly.
I've got to give the Republican Party a cheer in terms of their messaging, because what you just said that came from County Judge O'Hare, that's messaging. Instead of saying, okay, we're trying to suppress the vote, he's going to say we're trying to streamline.
That's what all this stuff is messaging. Though.
Messaging. And that's why I've got to give him a cheer on that. But it doesn't remove the fact that they tried to close voting locations on college campuses. Mm-hmm. And then come up and say we're trying to streamline.
He was right about a couple of them. Yeah. I think only 900 people voted at the Baptist Seminary, but UT Arlington was pretty busy.
Well, they might not have gotten the message that they were open. But anyway. Anyway.
Speaking of turning out new voters, the most tremendous job was done over the last couple of years in the Republican Party of Texas by Wayne Hamilton, Project Red. This is a group that set out 2 years ago before Donald Trump was back on the scene full blast and before the border was an issue that was on the national screen. And they said, let's see if we can't flip the Rio Grande Valley to Republican.
They made
huge
inroads.
The work in 2 years ago of recruiting local officials, recruiting candidates. They set up offices throughout the valley. They had candidates running for Justice of the Peace and Constable and all the down ballot offices. They said, we're going to establish the Republican Party in all these counties where the Democrats have constantly won, because we think these people are free enterprise, family values, Republican voters. And they flipped the whole valley. And so it started with Project Red, and Wayne Hamilton, Cat Parks from the state party, and you know, other Republicans who came in and helped. This was some of the holdover from the previous, from the Steve Ministeri days in the party, from the days of, you know, of the party establishment. And they managed to pull it off, and they pulled off one of the most incredible pivots that you could ever imagine in Texas politics, that the whole valley voted Republican.
Where was the state Democratic Party on that one? You know, Republicans have been setting up shop down in the valley for the past several years prioritizing it.
Chairman Hinojosa was quoted. He was asked about it. He said, oh, well, those voters know who we are, and they'll stay with us.
Yeah, we already
they
gave
didn't.
Him a G.
Now, some of those, some of those counties, though, had, I don't remember what the exact percentage was, but they had 50, 70 percentage point turnarounds in Republican favor this time around from the last time around. I mean, it was extraordinary.
It's another good example that, and it's a little bit of what we're doing in Tarrant County, too. The establishment knows how to grow the party.
Good point.
I'm going to do my last one now, and it is a chajir. So it's a half and half.
Just commit to something, man. Just commit. Oh, my gosh.
This is a chajir.
Haven't you done this episode with us before, Cheers and Jeers?
I have, but I always give you a curveball. That's why I saved it for last. So this is a chajir for Attorney General Ken Paxton. Ken Paxton had a good year.
Did you hear the breath?
Ken Paxton had a good year. He's been fighting the Biden administration. He has solidified support here in this state, in the GOP base, MAGA Republicans, et cetera. But, you know, just in this one year, he has settled that long-running securities fraud case that goes back, you know, a decade. Now, he did have to give up some stuff in that. He had to pay some restitution, a couple $100,000. Also had to perform 100 hours of community service. And I think probably the more embarrassing end of it is he's required to complete 15 hours of continuing legal education ethics and ethics in a course sponsored by the State Bar of Texas. This is the top lawyer for Texas having to take, you know,
remedial classes
on ethics and legal education. He also, though, got out of having to testify in that whistleblower case, the Texas Supreme Court, saying that he didn't have to testify, you know, after these impeachment charges were brought against him in 2023 and these whistleblowers filed suits. He got out of that. He successfully targeted and replaced lawmakers and highly placed justices who defied him in recent years. He got that through. And now, you know, there's been all this talk about this grand jury in San Antonio that may or may not be looking into Ken Paxton. Regardless of whether they are, if you have a Trump loyalist installed at the Justice Department in Washington, D.C., it's really going to benefit Ken Paxton. He's very close with Donald Trump. And so, you know, that's looking good for him right now. And then I think just this whole issue of John Cornyn, Senator John Cornyn, not getting that critical speaker, or not speaker,
majority leader
role in the U.S. Senate. You know, Paxton has already floated this idea out there about potentially primarying Cornyn in the next election. And, you know, perhaps it would have helped Cornyn a little bit if he, you know, came in saying, hey, I hold this really powerful position in the Senate that's able to bring more to Texas. He won't have that feather in his cap if Paxton decides to make a run against him.
He labeled that very well.
Chajir?
Chajir?
Chajir.
Chajir.
He won't
Chajir.
Commit at all. So you gasped, Bernadine, when he said Ken Paxton.
He had a good year overall.
Well, if you...
For him.
The message you just gave, sure, he did.
Yeah.
You know, what was...
It's all messaging, Bernadine. It's all messaging.
It's all messaging. And then... Hey, he needs to hire you as well.
No, I don't.
ERCOT should hire him. Fifth Circuit.
I don't want to work for any of these people.
No, I don't have anything that he said at all. I would just probably, instead of saying Chajir, I'd probably say Jeer. That's it.
Let me bring up another Republican who's been on this. I don't know if he's been on the podcast at all. It's Congressman Michael McCaul from Central Texas.
I don't think he has been on one of those.
He hasn't. He's on our political TV program quite a bit.
Been around forever, though.
He has.
I think well respected by a lot of folks.
I think by both sides of the aisle, yeah. I think he is. I think that's safe to say.
You don't see that so much anymore.
Are there many of them? I don't know if I could count them on one hand.
Unicorn.
Who are respected on both sides of the aisle.
And
he knows what he's talking about. He's not always trying to put himself on YouTube. So.
Yeah.
He can't stick around much longer in that case. It seems like that's where it's all going.
That's the question. What's his political future?
He's not just strictly party. Now, he's conservative.
Sure.
And he votes the way he should vote, but I was looking at a picture, and let's hope it's true that it wasn't IA. But anyway, where Congresswoman Nancy Pelosi had failed, mm-hmm. and you saw them where she fell, but he was holding her hand.
Yeah.
You know, making sure, giving her support, and making sure she was okay.
That's decency.
Yeah, that's on their decency. Their trip to.
And old school.
I think he is a really decent
They were in
person.
Luxembourg, wasn't
but
it?
But they were on that congressional delegation trip, commemorating the Battle of the Bulge when she fell, broke her hip, and he was the one leading that. But you know, in this day and age, when some Republicans praise Russian dictator Vladimir Putin. McCaul, as chair of Foreign Affairs Committee, as a former chair of Homeland Security, he calls it for what it is.
Yeah.
What
he has full punches.
Chairman Xi is for the Chinese Communist Party, what Vladimir Putin is, he calls these threats out. He keeps his eye on the ball. He continues to be influential in warning of these threats. The question now, though, he's walking away from the chairmanship. Of the House Homeland Security Committee, very influential committee. And the big question is, what does he do next? What will he do next? He said, well, I want to stay in Congress, I want to be a thought leader. And we asked him again on Inside Texas Politics. You guys should watch that program sometimes.
I'm
plugging the heck out of it.
You should work for them.
I should. I'm on the payroll, actually. But I asked him, I said, so what's next politically for you? And he said, I've had a lot of offers inside politics and outside politics. I don't know yet what I'm going to do. Some people have been floating his name as a potential, challenger against John Cornyn. I don't know if he would run against John Cornyn. If Cornyn doesn't run for re-election, maybe he runs against
Ken Paxton,
if Paxton's a guy who runs for that. I don't know how that would shake out. I don't know if McCaul seems to rise above politics to me. And I don't know if he'd want a fist fight like that. A bloody fist fight.
Oh, that could be a very messy primary.
Yeah.
What do you? He could walk away tarnished.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know if he'd want that. All right, Bernadine, you're up next. Who do you have?
Well, you know what? I want to just like we said that Congressman McCaul has courage.
Yeah.
Well, I want to give my next cheer to State Representative Jeff Leach. Because I think not only is he decent.
Republican from Collin County.
Republican from Collin County. But also for the Robertson effort that he's doing.
The death row case.
And has kept him from being killed.
Yeah.
Kept him off. He's still on death row, but he has kept him from being executed.
Yeah. And also his role in the Ken Paxton impeachment last year. I mean, that was that took some courage to do what he did. I mean, he was under a lot of threat because of that, and there was a personal relationship there, and he stood up for what he thought was right.
Melissa Lucio is another inmate that he's.
So it's just not a first for him. And remember, he was challenged by Paxton and others as well in the primary, and he came out because he. I think that he keeps in good contact with his constituents, and they applaud some of the things that he does. So I think that he definitely. What you going to say?
Oh, I was just going to say that somebody came out with that adage. I forget how it goes exactly, but it's hard for someone else to define you to your voters if they already know you.
And I think that he said that once he won. You know, you can't just abandon your voters and think that they're going to continue to vote you and not believe what your adversaries say about you,
mm-hmm.
what your opponents say about you. So I think that I would definitely, I'm giving him a cheer.
Mm. And again, that's the lesson, Bud, that Democrats could have learned down in the valley. You know, you got to still show up and show those voters who you are. You can't just take for granted that they're going to be there every election.
They have to know you and they have to see you. And, then it's a lot tougher for people to send out a lot of fake mailers from somewhere else in the state about a candidate they never met or heard of.
Yeah, and importantly, you don't just show up and say all your ideas. You actually listen to what they're telling you too, because they may be telling you something that you think, wow, they're changing down this way and I better start changing too if I want to keep their support.
Bernadine's almost out of beer here, so Bud, bring us home.
Well, we've got more, Bernadine. Yeah.
We have more.
And I'm jeering because for 20 years, this voucher issue has been going on in Texas for 20 years. There was a great move in the House. 20 years ago, they were very close to passing vouchers, and the House voted at the last minute. They said, if this is such a good idea, let's just make it a pilot program and put it in the home district of the lawmaker who wrote the bill. Hmm. They're going to put it into, and that was voted down by a cross section, so vouchers didn't make it that time. And it keeps coming back every year, but never gets passed. The teachers, the school leaders of Texas, and the parents who are really invested in their public schools have known for 20 years that this was coming, that this was on the brink. Yet, we come around to this election, their candidates are on the ballot. The people who stuck up against vouchers, who stuck up for public schools in the Republican Party every year faithfully are on the ballot. Where are the organizations to turn out votes for them? Where are the teachers? Where are the coaches? The coaches who don't want their football team split up? Where are the chambers of commerce who don't want their schools shrunk? What happens in rural Texas when the district gets split up because some church opened a private school and then the public district is too small and has to be combined with another school and the kids have to go a county over or whatever? What happened to all the leaders who spoke so eloquently about public schools? They could not get organized and keep their people. 12 advocates for public schools got defeated in the primary because the education voters of Texas were not organized. And it's so just amazing.
A jeers for the public school stakeholders.
Jeers for all the stakeholders in public schools.
You know, we were getting ready for our debate with Colin Allred and Ted Cruz. You shared something that I did not know, and that is there is already a voucher program in this state for colleges.
Right.
So if you don't get into a state school, you can apply and get cash to go to a private college.
And that's to relieve the public school system. There's a small Texas tuitional equalization grant that's been around since I went to college on it. That's how long it's been around.
You got a voucher?
I had a voucher. I was a voucher recipient. Because that back then they said, well, you know, these state schools, they're overcrowded. If we give them some state money to go to private schools, that'll help with crowding. But it doesn't take the whole cost of the education.
Sure.
And what it does, the state keeps, you know, a tremendous amount of money that taxpayers paid and gives back a small amount of money to go to a private school. It relieves the system. It doesn't hand over a giant, it doesn't give you $35,000 to go to a Does that even get you into a private school anymore? It doesn't give you $35,000.
Down payment.
It doesn't give you $200,000 to go to Rice. So,
no,
but it is a voucher. There's a voucher system in Texas, and that could be a model easily for the public schools, is have a small voucher that would give people half their money back. Say, okay, in an average year, we take up $9,000 a year that goes to education. We'll give you $4,500. If you go to private school, we'll keep $4,500 to educate all your next door neighbors. Is that okay? That's okay. Maybe it'll be something like that.
Or Bud, what if we
Texas
were to see
Texas does have that?
What if we were to see a comeback of the old rule, like you mentioned way back when they said, okay, whoever wrote the bill, let's try that first,
right. Where
you come from, and see how it goes for the next 2 years. If it's a wild success just in your neck of the woods, then we can take it statewide.
And then if you get reelected, we'll see.
Yeah, a bunch of ifs in there.
That's smart.
But that's not Governor Abbott's plan.
Yeah.
No, and you know. The other question too, Bud, you well know, you inform us a lot on this stuff too, but Governor Abbott wants this to be universal, meaning anybody can get the money. But the question is, at what price tag? $8,000 or $10,000 is what they were talking about. That might get people into a parish school and pay for that tuition, but it's not going to pay for a lot of other schools. It will pay partial tuition, but not all of them.
And he says universal, but you'd have to be able to pay the rest, the remainder of the money.
Sure, yeah.
So
and get your child to that campus every day if there's not school bus service, et cetera.
And so it still would be targeted towards a certain segment of the state, of the people.
Is that initial cost what it ends up being, you know, 2, 4, 6, 8 years down the road as well? So, you know, you've been chasing this car for a long time, you know, like a dog chasing the car.
Years,
you finally caught it. Maybe finally caught it this time around. Is it more than you can fit your mouth around.
What it does do again, Jason, we hope, Jason and Jason, is that maybe it will make public schools more outspoken about their value, what they bring, their quality. Yeah. Maybe it'll make them compete more for students. They still, although the state has tried to make public schools compete in the public marketplace, printed their grades out and all this, they're still not competitive there. They can't stand up and say exactly, this is what's great about our school district, why you should come here instead of taking your money and going to this private school.
But
maybe it will make public
now.
Schools be focused and more competitive.
Yeah, I think the part that's important that you just said to me is that it might make them stand up and say it.
Yeah.
Because the schools are getting better. But
the
it's that message.
Are,
the public schools are getting better in certain cities, in certain areas, but it's that message out there.
But could those public schools start losing some of their higher performers if those higher performers can go off to a private school, number one? And if I open a private school and don't require you to take tests, and the state doesn't require for you to take tests at my private school, but they still require it at the public school, and the public school fails that test overall, that's known then as a failing school, but we don't know how my kids are doing because I don't have to test mine.
Yeah, the accountability question is what the legislature is going to figure out, I think, to get Republicans on board.
Yeah.
Well, and then you have the charters in the big middle, because the charters have already taken some of the kids. The charters are not getting any of this money from anywhere. They're not getting tax money. They're not getting voucher money.
Yeah.
So the charters have to sustain that system that's the real choice system in Texas, and they're going to have to make clear, you know, why they're a better choice, too. Mm.
Yeah.
Wow. So we're going out here on the longest episode, I think, of the year. But
wow,
it's enlightening. I'm disappointed, and you get the last jeer here, bro.
How so?
Because
what'd I do?
Commit to one of these, man. A chajir?
I thought I would get a cheer for having a chajir, and I can't believe I'm the only one who had a chajir.
You are the only one, because it doesn't exist.
I think I should get a cheer just for coming up with that name. It's very catchy, don't you agree?
Well, maybe.
You heard her gasp when you said it, right? Hey, listen, we've had a really interesting year on Y'all Too. So I always appreciate you guys listening, watching our episodes.
We hit 2 million. Listens this year,
and including
downloads,
our viewers,
and
now
that doesn't
too.
Even include the viewers on
we're
YouTube.
At 3 million
I think we're at close to 3 million now.
So thanks so much for listening
and watching.
And watching as well. What I like about it is that we don't have to shove this into a soundbite and shove it into 90 seconds or a quick reel. We can just have a conversation. So if you're interested in those conversations, and clearly a lot of folks have been, we appreciate you listening, and hope you'll download us in the new year.
Yeah, and have wonderful holidays. We will be here throughout, and then to start off a very busy 2025 with a new legislative session.
Happy New Year.
Click subscribe and get Y'all-a-tics every week. Y'all-a-tics, the unofficial political podcast of Texas.